This call is being recorded by the meeting organizer. By staying on the call, you are giving your consent to being recorded.
Okay, we are now recording. Now I'm going to mute everyone, and again, send us a chat questionnaire question or just via telephone at the end of the call. I'm going to now mute everybody.
Presentation mode is now enabled.
Okay, I want to start out with a welcome and introduction. Let me start out by sharing with you that here in Tampa, in my office, I have Peggy Allen, who's going to be co-presenting this morning, and also Antonio Roman Perez. We have other staff members participating in the call separately, directly from their desks. Also joining us this morning is Gloria Spradley Brown, our Bureau Chief in Tallahassee. Gloria, you want to say welcome to everybody?
Hello, and welcome to each of you, and I'm looking forward to our 2015-2016 program year.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I put this slide up here just in case you have anyone that needs to have the audio portion. Obviously, you're already listening. You can forward this to anybody if they need to call in separately. But I also wanted to point out, as I already mentioned, that this session will be recorded, and we're going to provide that link to you as soon as we have it so that you'll be able to access this webinar at that time just to take other notes or in case someone was not able to listen in at this time. I would ask that you minimize the noise that you have and the ability to do everything that we do by doing a couple of things for me. We already put the phone on mute, and we talked about that. But also, I'd like you to minimize anything else that you have going on your computer. We discovered last time we did this in January that it was sometimes a difficult time between the time the PowerPoint showed up on your end and the time the PowerPoint was clicked on this end. So I would ask you to shut down any Outlook email, Word, Internet website, anything that you have on concurrent to the webinar, as it does restrict the bandwidth of the system and it causes delays. Okay, this is the agenda that we're going to be using for the webinar today. We already started with the welcome introductions. I'll be talking about the RFA from an OU perspective and how to submit the application. Peggy Allen is going to help me with that piece of it as we talk about the fiscal end and budget development, things of that sort. I'll come back and discuss with you other elements of the application you need to submit, like the self-assessment report form, the balanced performance measures, and all the special conditions. And then, as I mentioned at the end, we'll open it back up for participant questions. Okay, let me just start out by sharing with you what our goals are this afternoon. We want to make sure that you understand the opportunities, information being provided by these RFAs. We're going to also talk about some very pertinent programmatic information because this is the first set of RFAs that we're going to be releasing from the Department of Education under WIOA, or the Opportunity Act, as it's now being called. We're also going to review the new uniform guidance requirements that took effect last December, but this is the first funding of our programs under the new guidance effective July 1, 2015. We'll also be talking a little bit about performance reporting requirements for our funding agency, Department of Labor. Those are very important, as you know. And then finally, two things that are important to you, and that is the RFA submission requirements and to clarify special conditions for funding in 2015. Okay, I'm going to start out by doing an overview of the RFA. Before I do that in a very specific way, I want to just kind of put this in context for you from this perspective. As I mentioned earlier, this is the first set of RFAs that we're doing where we're implementing the new WIOA guidelines. In spite of that fact, we don't actually have the Department of Labor rules yet. Those were scheduled to be released in January, but we won't be getting them until later this month or early April. As a result of that, we've done the best we can looking at the law and talking to our federal funding agencies about how to put out this RFA. There might be a need as we move forward sometime between the time that you submit your application and before we generate the award letter, that there might be additional information that we need from you based on the new rules that we get or the new Green Book guidelines that can't be published until the rules are released. So I just want to share with you that that might happen. In addition to that, I want to clear up one of the things I heard a week or two ago, and that is the opinion that this is going to be a competitive year. Initially, it was intended to be a competitive year because we were on that cycle. A couple of things have happened that have changed that. This is, in fact, a continuation funding opportunity. One of those things is the implementation of WIOA. I mentioned to you that we're starting the WIOA implementation July 2015, but full implementation will not take place until July 1, 2016. In addition to that, all the rules requiring all of the different core programs in WIOA, both from Department of Labor and Department of Education, are having to be written. As a result of that, the Department of Labor felt that it was a good idea to, instead of having a competition for the national funding, to instead do a continuation. So this year, the state of Florida has been continued into 2015-16. So it made sense then for us as well to do a continuation funding for you guys, direct service providers. So this is, in fact, a continuation. So that allows us to have more flexibility in terms of how we help you put together your application, more flexibility in the process we use to do the actual award, and more flexibility in making changes as necessary as we go forward. The other thing I wanted to mention to you about WIOA is that it's a landmark legislation that's going to require us to, based on federal requirement now, to really work together with all of our sister programs. And you're going to see that in more detail as we go throughout the RFA. We'll talk about that at length, about the opportunity that we have to really use this legislation to move our programs forward. Okay, let's talk about the funding purpose and priorities. I want to focus on this first portion right here, where it says strengthen the ability. Keep in mind, that's what we're all about. And what we discovered is that this is a joint effort, that we can't do this alone. We ought not only need to be able to work with ourselves throughout the state, but all of our other partners that we're going to be working with through WIOA need to be part of this process of strengthening the ability of all the eligible migrant seasonal farm workers. And we'll talk more about this eligibility issue in just a little bit. The second thing in terms of purpose, this last piece about achieving economic self-sufficiency, is a critical component of WIOA that we need to continue to emphasize and reemphasize and move forward on. This idea of self-sufficiency is critically important to anything that we do and how we do it. And if we're not able to make that happen, then we're not complying with the ultimate purpose of this RFA or of the WIOA guidelines. Okay, the allocation for each of the grantees was based on a total population of farm workers in the state broken down by region and prior performance. We gave everybody a proportionate share based on that region's population of farm workers and historical performance. And as I mentioned, this will be a continuation year. This is the actual breakout for both of the RFAs. Aid to districts, a little over $3 million. We've increased the statewide emergency assistance allocation to $60,000 for a total allocation of about $3.3 million. Again, this note here is important. This is contingent upon approval by the Department of Labor. We do not yet have that approval and won't get it until we submit our grant application to them in May. So that'll be coming probably sometime in late June, early July. In the RFA attachment B, you'll see the allocation charts for both the direct services RFA and the statewide emergency assistance RFA. I want to point out here to you that the budget allocations have been revised. So if you downloaded the RFA before March 17th, please go back to the FLDOE funding website and print it out again, because we updated the allocation chart in attachment B on March 17th. Okay, our target population, as y'all know, is eligible migrant seasonal farm workers as outlined in Section 167 of WIOA. Please refer to both attachments A and C, as you'll get a lot more details on what that means. I'd like to point out one thing to you here, if you hadn't already noticed this. This program used to be in NWEA called the National Farm Worker Jobs Program. NWEOA, that title was changed. We still are under Title I, Section 167, but the label for Section 167 is now Migrant and Seasonal Farm Workers. National Farm Worker Job Program as a title no longer exists. We have the same kind of program. It's just now called the Migrant Seasonal Farm Worker Programs. In Florida, we have further redefined that, and our program is called the Farm Worker Career Development Program. And we'll talk more about that when we talk about special conditions. The other idea here about eligibility, please, again, refer to Attachment C. It goes over all the details. There are some changes to the eligibility criteria. One of the changes, for example, is that the term disadvantage is no longer at use in WIOA. Now it's called low income. It means essentially the same thing, but now disadvantage is no longer part of the eligibility definition in WIOA. In addition to that, as you know, we have ongoing immigration reform legislation processes. We have executive action from the president that are impacting eligibility. And as those eligibility criteria change, we'll get informed by the Department of Labor and advise you accordingly. But as it stands right now, the eligibility criteria that's outlined in attachment A and C are, in fact, the law of the land. Now, keep in mind, we have not yet received the rules. We'll get those rules, as I said, later this month, early April, and then we'll definitely pass that on to you for specific information about eligibility criteria. Okay, we're going to spend some time now talking to you, Peggy and I, about how to prepare and submit the application. And this is the point in time where I would ask you to toggle back and forth between the RFA and the PowerPoint. I'll try and allow time for you to do that changing of documents as we go through each one of these slides. Let me just kind of point out to you, and these are things that you probably already know, but it's amazing how many folks don't go to the right place. Make sure you go to this link, and you have a copy of this electronically, so you should be able to just hit this link to go to the right location to download this RFA. What's important to know is that there are more than one RFAs posted. Make sure that you download the correct one. This is the Direct Services Farm Worker Career Development Program RFA. Don't download the Adult General Education RFA or all the other RFAs that are up there. Make sure you get the right one. This next piece of instruction here, in a continuation year, there's a tendency, I know, to just want to cut and paste from what you did last year. I'm asking you to please not do that. I mean, there are certain things I'm sure you can cut and paste because they haven't changed. However, make sure you read the entire RFA carefully and follow the instructions. This is going to be our most difficult thing to do, is to make sure that we have the right forms in place, we have the right kinds of things in the package that you submit to make sure that we don't delay the process of getting you the award letter. So take the time, please, to review the RFA carefully, ask questions either on this call or email me separately, and we'll be glad to work through them with you. There's a series of forms and a narrative that are required in the applications. And finally, if you use the checklist on the last page of the RFA, that'll help you a lot to make sure that everything is submitted in the right order and everything is included in the RFA submission. If you haven't dealt with the Florida Department of Education Grants Management Office, let me just share with you that they take it very seriously when they give you a deadline. I think the due date is April 24th, and they mean that seriously. So close of business, 5 o'clock p.m., April 24th, if your application is not there and timestamped, will not be considered for funding. So if you're going to have a problem with that, please let me know ahead of time. There is, and let's look at the RFA now. I'm going to give you a few seconds to toggle to the RFA. I think it's page 9. Okay. And the RFA talks about having a 20-page maximum. There's a requirement here for the format. This is, says margin size 1 inch, double spaced, single-sided pages. You see all that? Take that literally And if it's 21 pages, we can't look at the 21st page. We'll look at the first 20 pages to make sure you use this font, use this format to submit your narrative. Most of you don't have a problem with doing this, but if we have any new applicants out there or new people writing this, make sure you follow this guideline. Okay, on this slide, what you see are 8 different elements that should be in your narrative. We're going to go over each one of these elements separately, but let me just share with you up front. We would really ask you to not to get too creative with the format here. If this says we need 8 elements, we need 8 elements, and we need you to title them as they're indicated on this slide. Don't get creative and come up with a different title. Use these titles and use these 8 elements, and then the application review will go a lot faster. In the project aspect or summary section, again, looking to the RFA on page 9, that's a 1-page summary. Literally, not 1 page and a paragraph, not 1.5 pages, it's 1 page. So restrict yourself to that, keeping in mind that the summary is supposed to give us a snapshot picture of the entire project, all the way from the purpose, specific goals, program design, and then the ultimate bottom line significance to the target population. In section 2, in the labor market assessment, again, looking at the RFA, keep in mind that this is not looking for you to give us a labor market assessment for the United States or even the state of Florida. Okay? This is asking for the service area of your project. And specifically, if you look at the RFA, we need to have you tell us about projections of the current employment needs, any projected skill shortages, new or changing industries, specific job opportunities, demand, occupations, and please cite data information sources for the numbers and data that you put in this section. We want you to be able to tell us what it is that you're looking for in your area relative to labor market needs. Again, if you need any help with that, we can certainly provide assistance on where to go to be able to get that information. But working with your partners that are locally, you already know where to go to get this kind of information, whether it be the CareerSource folks. There's a lot of websites out there that will be a lot of information about target occupational lists in your area, and so we can help you with that process as well. All right, section 3, project need. This is where you describe to us the kind of needs that you have in your service area as it relates to the target population. That's a farm worker and his or her family. Remember, eligibility, or this program includes dependents, ability to achieve that self-sufficiency that we talked about earlier and how to eliminate the barriers to make that happen. Again, looking at the RFA, there's criteria there. I'm not going to go over them all in detail, but I'd like to point out to you that we want you to explain any gaps or weaknesses in service that might provide a bigger need or problem. If you have, for example, if you live in a rural area and there's geographic separation needs or transportation issues or other kind of things to get in the way, please point that out as part of the needs barriers that have to get resolved. In section 4 is where you start to tell us how you're going to build your project, how you're going to design it to describe and describe the measurable objectives that you have already talked about and how you're going to achieve those. Keeping in mind that the objectives should be very specific, should be measurable, achievable yet challenging, but most importantly, that the design of the project aligns with and will address the needs of the target population or other identified needs. It's critically important that when we look at the way that you build your project, that it makes sense that you'll be able to accomplish the goals for this grant. As we look at project design implementation, we actually have, I think it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, just like 7 or 8 different subsections, 8 through G. Make sure that each subsection is titled the way that it is in the RFA. The first subsection, objectives and timelines, this is where you talk about those specific things that we just mentioned. Then in section B, this is a critical piece. This is where you're going to share with us how you're going to assess your participants. Again, looking at the RFA, we want you to share with us the kind of instruments you're going to use to be able to do the initial academic and occupational assessments, and how you're going to do the placements, how you're going to be able to determine whether or not the things that if you're trying to get done are going to work for the participant that you're working with. So as you make that decision, keep in mind that there are standard kind of assessment instruments that we use in Florida. For example, we use a TAE test for doing basic skills assessment. We use a CASAS test for doing English literacy assessment. You do have choices when it comes to doing career assessment, but there are others out there that you can use as well, as long as it works for you and you can defend that process, then we don't have a problem with it. So please keep in mind that this assessing participant piece is very critical because it helps to start the ball rolling down the road, if you will, because if you don't know where you're starting, you don't know what to do in order to be able to get the individual there. If you turn to page 11 in the RFA, I talked about choices. Please keep in mind the section here where it talks about compliance with Florida's Career and Professional Education Act, the CAPE Act. If you're not familiar with that, you need to get familiar with that. Because that's part of what we're about in this state is helping people get that career and professional education. And there are requirements in the Act about how that is done. And also there's opportunities for you to learn about processes that are in place, about frameworks that are in place, about other programs that are in place to help those things take place. Please share with us all the information you have about how you're going to place folks in training for high wage and high skilled jobs. Again, which is appropriate to the employment-related aptitude of the participant based on those assessments that you did initially. And if necessary, you certainly want to engage in the process of teaching English. And if it's necessary, we encourage you to use technology-based English instruction either as part of your agency or independently, but make sure that they've been approved by the state adult ESOL coordinator. And we can work with you on identifying those kinds of tools. Subsection C, this is kind of like if doing the first part there in terms of the assessment is the steering wheel of the car, this training and other services is like the engine. Because if you don't have this process going, then your car ain't going very far. So here you need to spend a lot of time talking to us about how you're going to provide the different types of trainings and services across the wide range of needs in your area that you identified earlier, and it's specifically focus on the kind of services that are going to be provided. Now, this is one of the places I want to stop and just kind of have you really focus on the fact that we're now under WIOA and not WIA. And the services that are now described under WIOA are in Attachment A, and we'll talk more about those in more detail in just a little bit. But there are certain workforce investment activities that are authorized, a lot of emphasis on career pathway development, career planning, and for sure related assistance services. But all the training and other services need to fall within the WIOA guidelines. As you look at the other elements of the training and other services here on page 11, please keep in mind that the services that are going to be described and provided, and we'll talk more about this in more detail, under WIOA now are no longer going to be provided in a sequence of service fashion. It used to be we did that one step at a time, went from core services to intensive services. You learn English first and basic skills, and you do all that in sequence. So that sequence of service model is gone in WIOA. Now the core and intensive services have been collapsed into something called career services. And a lot of these things can happen concurrently where it's appropriate. And we can talk more with you about how to make that design in your particular project. But keep in mind that the whole idea here of WIOA is to combine all these different services when appropriate to be able to help folks get to that ultimate goal. Okay, if you would turn with me to page 12 in the RFA, there's more criteria there that talks about that issue. keeping in mind that, if you have gaps or weaknesses in services, that you explain what those are, and that you identify supportive services that you're going to provide that's going to enable the participant to overcome the barriers that they have. This next subsection is another critical piece of WIOA. We've always kind of understood that we need to work together, but I think WIOA is the first time that I've seen federal legislation where it really literally sends this message, and that is that we're not really in this program alone. That what we're about here is trying to figure out how to work together as a team, and then to utilize all of the programs that are funded by WIOA and all of the other programs that are funded by the federal government to be able to work together to be able to achieve our common goals. So this collaboration with other agencies in your local area, and we're going to talk more about that in, as we get further down the road here, is critically important. I know a lot of you are already doing this collaborative piece and you're doing a good job of it. We just need to make sure that we clearly understand across all service sectors that by working together, we should be better able to assist, enable, and empower the qualified farm worker population. As you talk about in your application, the collaborative piece, it can't just be a general kind of statement that says, well, I'm going to work with this agency. We need the specific information listed here in subsection D about the agency, contact person information, type of services to be provided, timeline, total funding, things of that sort. Keep in mind that there might be a need to have a collaboration agreement with certain agencies, and if that's the case, please ensure that you include those or indicate they're going to be provided at the appropriate time. One thing that does have to be included in terms of collaboration is the Regional Workforce Development Board, MOU. That's there in subsection E. This has to be fully executed with both current signature and date. And it's important to point out here that the timeline identified in the MOU has to cover the timeline of this grant period. You'd be amazed at how often we've seen MOUs that don't really cover the funding period. So please make sure that you look at the current MOUs that you have and that they do, in fact, cover the period from July 1, 2015 to June 30, 2016. We will be looking at those MOUs in depth this year to make sure that they clearly identify what the responsibilities are of each party and that they align with WIOA Title I, Section 167 responsibilities. The MOU, there's a note here, does not count towards your maximum page count of 20. Another offshoot of collaboration, which is really something we've been emphasizing over the past year and a half, is the idea of having a local advisory council slash committee in place that's comprised of folks in your community that are going to help you help enable the participants get to where they need to be. There's program office guidelines on this. We'll talk more about this committee structure in just a little bit. But it's important that you identify in your application that you are going to have a committee, who the committee members are going to be, the kinds of purposes that you're going to have for this committee. So Section G talks about the fact that you need to be able to demonstrate in your application that you are, in fact, able to accomplish the goals of WIOA, Section 167. And you can use past experiences, successes with the target population. Any kind of supported data during the time period identified here would be necessary for you to be able to make that case. It's also important that you talk about not just evidence capability historically. As we ramp up the program and we're going to be asking to do more things, you see in the allocation we're actually giving you more money than you had last year, even though you're being continued. Well, that should then translate into higher capacity. So make sure you talk about that capability moving forward, both in terms of how you're going to structure your staff, how you're going to deploy the resources, how you're going to be able to engage more effectively with the employers in your community. Okay, Section 5 of the narrative talks about evaluation. This is an area that I would really like to focus more on this year than we have in the past. because what it does, it talks about having you evaluate your program, not just using the measures that are embedded into the database or Department of Labor requirements or common measures, and not just in the self-evaluation form you can fill out this attachment, but to have some kind of process internally to evaluate whether or not your program is working, whether it be a monthly activity report, taking a look at your monthly expenditure reports, staffing requirements, having regularly scheduled staff meetings, to have some process in place to where you can say, yeah, you know, this is where I thought I wanted to be, and I'm not there yet, and this is why I'm not there yet, or this is a problem I'm having, or this, yeah, I'm actually getting there, and this is how I know I'm getting there. So please, in your application, talk about how you're going to evaluate your own program. And if you need any assistance with those tools, let us know, and we'll help you come up with some strategies of how you can do a more internal evaluation of your program. Section 6 of the narrative is a federal program requirement called GEPA. If you're not familiar with that, you need to get familiar with that. This is the General Education Provisions Act, and you have to provide a one-page description of the process that is in place at your agency to ensure equitable access for everybody. This is critically important, particularly from a federal monitoring perspective. They get very concerned if we're not ensuring that we have equitable access embedded into our project designs. Subsection 7 there, the narrative, make sure that you go to that link there, the URL that talks about the strategic goals for Florida State Board of Education. And that you align in your project some way of addressing the initiatives of reading and math and science. It should be pretty straightforward because that's kind of what we're doing anyway in terms of our overall training and process of getting folks to where we need to go. You just need to be able to document that as support of these imperatives. In Section 8 there is the budget. I'm going to be turning that over to Peggy here in just a second to talk about the budget. Let me just make sure that you understand the submission process. You need to submit one application with the original agency head signature. The only caveat to this is if the agency head designates in writing someone else that can sign for them, and you need to have that letter submitted to the Florida Department of Education Grants Management Office. I'm serious when I tell you this. They check signatures. And if you don't have the right agency head, or if you have somebody in there that's not the agency head, you don't have the letter, they will not move your project forward. Make sure that either if it's a district, it's got to be a superintendent. If it's a college, it's got to be the president of the college or their designee under written authorization. And you have to also include 4 identical copies of the original. So that's a total of 5 copies, 1 original and 4 copies. You need to make sure that the copies are identical to the original. They will check that. And here's the address of where to send it to. And again, it needs to be there at that location not later than 5 o'clock on April 24th. Okay, let me turn over to Peggy, and she's going to talk to you now about the budget portion of the narrative. Peggy?
Good afternoon, everyone. The budget section 8 of the narrative is set up so that you can actually plan how you plan how you intend to spend your funds. So the key is planning it. What is needed in order to support your mission is what you're asking yourself. You want to be to have present with you as you're planning your budget. Finance person should be with you in planning because they have a better idea of how to categorize your title, as well as have an idea of your spending patterns from previous years. So you want to have those items available along with meeting with your financial manager of your grant. You want to ensure that the codes that you use to title your budget narrative is the same as the codes that your agency actually use. You want to be able to explain each line item using the same account name that your agency used in order to identify the account and the amount. And within Section 8, you want to elaborate each line item. And while putting together this budget narrative, consider the reader or the person who will be viewing this. In case they have questions, you want to set it up in a format that will make it easier for them to identify and not just pump it all together as one big paragraph, but maybe set in your each line item into its own paragraph, highlighting the title and including the amount that you're planning to spend. And that, again, will be each line item should be explained in this section of the RFA. You want to make sure that the explanation states what, why, where, when, quantities, and collaborations with other funding sources if that particular line item is used with other funding sources. You want to make sure that each line item is realistic and reasonable and it supports the goals of the program. And make sure that as you're budgeting, your goal is to create a budget as accurate as possible. But again, we realize that we are proposing. So you want to include in there like actual costs that you know up front, how much is it going to take in order to operate that particular line. And also proposed costs. For example, if you are expecting salary increases for the upcoming year, you want to include in there the proposed cost, not the current cost, so you can prevent having to amend your budget later on down during the year. So you want to include how much will salary cost if there is an increase, as well as the benefits that will be included with the salary. And you want to ensure that your expenditures titles throughout your RFA, you want to ensure that those titles matches this budget narrative section 8 on the RFA, the 101S, which is your budget form, and also your 599 forms. You want to ensure that each of those titles are exactly the same to make sure that they're consistent. By doing so, you can prevent questions later on during the monitoring process as trying to distinguish, are these the same line items, although the titles are different. So just make sure that the titles are consistent. And again, formatted is key, so however you set it up, you can underline or boldface the titles and put the amount in Section 8 so that if a viewer has a question regarding a particular line item as opposed to reading through the entire Section 8, have it highlighted so that the viewer can easily locate that particular line item. And when I'm referring to viewers, I'm referring to once this is set up, this is part of your grant for the next year's auditors, or as we go out to monitor, anyone who's reviewing this grant will be able to locate your line items with ease without having to go through the entire Section 8 in order to determine where a particular line item is. You want to also ensure that you include like in-kind contributions and the estimated monetary value for each of those. And after you complete this section, just check through and ask yourself, are these items thorough? Are they specific? Does it support the scope of this program? You want to ensure that the expenses are allowable, they're realistic, they're accurate, and that it supports the program precisely, and that the projected expenditures are reasonable in regard to the number of participants that you plan to serve during this grant year. And you also want to ask yourself, calculate if the placement to ensure that the placement does not exceed the statewide average of $5,956. You want to ensure that the personnel who will be operating this project is clearly explained and stated. You want to ensure that each expenditure is justified. And then also make sure you include in there your in-kind contributions and the monetary value. So this slide here, slide 20, shows you an example of a budget item. Notice that you have salaries and you have professional service and contractual services. We want to ensure that the contract is included in with your RFA packet and an updated contract. So if your contract is not updated, if it has already expired before you submit the RFA, try to get a new contract that will be updated. And also equipment. If you're planning to purchase equipment during the new grant year, you want to include in there your projected equipment purchase form. And that's found within your RFA and submitted with the grant. These are the contractual services as well as the equipment purchase form should be included with your package. Regarding materials and supplies, if you're using materials and supplies as one line item for both students and staff, and make sure you elaborate on how are you going to be able to distinguish that from an accounting perspective between your staff supplies and your student supplies. Because I know some of you, all of those have like some of the same functions and object codes. So just make sure you include in Section 8 exactly how you're planning to distinguish the difference between supplies relating to students and staff if they have the same object and function code. And regarding the function code, now school districts have used the red book and they have function and object codes, but all of you have your own set of codes that you will use in order to distinguish your different accounts in your budget. If you're using the same function and object codes, and some of you do that for various reasons. As I spoke to some of you during this grant year, you use the same object and function codes because that's the way you've always done it, and that's the way you thought it had to be. You thought the state required you to do that. And some of the, from the programmatic side, they thought it was part of their accounting system. So find out if your accounting system actually requires you to use the same function and object code. And if so, separate it as you've always done, but make sure you elaborate on how they're used in Section 8 of your narrative. And if you can group them together, if there's no rule against grouping them together, then go ahead and group them together and, again, just explain exactly what they're, for instance, if your books and tuition, textbooks and tuition has the same function and object code, and you can group them together, go ahead and group them together because all of those are going to the participants. And if you can just make that accounting practice a lot more simplified and group them, go ahead and put them as one line item. Okay, regarding contractual services agreement, the applicant is it is your responsibility to manage your contract. So therefore, again, you need to ensure that you have an updated contract on file with this RFA. And you want to also include in Section 8 when you're listing this particular line item for contractual services, you want to include in there, how are you planning to monitor this contract to ensure that they're meeting the goals and that are set aside in the contract? So how are you planning to monitor? Those are some things that we're looking for as we go out to monitor during the year. How are you monitoring your contractors yourself? In the Form 200, that is, the project is not official until you receive this Form 200. This is actually your award notification. And your accounting personnel is familiar with how to download the funds from the card system. So that is how the funding is actually received through the card system. So if anyone is having problems with the card system or has any questions regarding how to download from the card system, please contact our office so that we will be able to explain that process. And the DOE 599 form is actually included with this application as a way that you can actually set up your account, your expenditures account, so that we can actually form your electronic workbook. Now, included in this is a sample. The 599 is a sample, and it has like sample titles, but you will use your own titles in order to describe your account. And just referring back to what I stated earlier, you want to ensure that those accounts match the account titles matches the account titles included in your budget. And you want to, after completing this expenditure report, you want to make sure that the totals up to what your budget items totals up to as well. And when you're calculating salaries, notice if you've noticed from previous 599, salaries and benefits are collaborated into one group. That's how you will actually group them together on your 599. But the 599 is not your budget. So whenever we're conducting a budget amendment, we are using your budget to determine, for instance, benefits. Benefits are grouped together on your 599, but on your budget, because there are different codes, function and object codes, and you will have to list them separately on your budget. So remember the date that June 30th, 2016 is the last day to encumber funds for the upcoming grant year, and your final report is due August 20th, 2016, and the original report will go to our controller's office, and you can still send a copy to me electronically.
Okay. Thank you, Peggy. I want to talk a little bit about the uniform guidance that was mentioned on a previous slide, and we mentioned earlier that it's going to be implemented effective July 1, 2015 in this RFA. In your RFA, it's actually on page 3 where there's a description of this uniform guidance implementation process. If you're not familiar with this, you need to get familiar with it. Please go to this link down here at the bottom where there are a lot of technical assistance documents. One of the issues that I want to point out to you is that because the DOE Green Book has not been updated yet, there will be some additional information provided in the Green Book as it relates to uniform guidance, and we don't know exactly what that will be. However, we were informed that one of the items that's in the uniform guidance that's going to be included in the Green Book is a risk assessment determination process that's going to be pre-award. What that means is there's going to be some kind of form that you guys are going to have to fill out probably after the application is submitted, but before the award has been, award letter, DOE 200 has been granted, to ensure that you pass this risk assessment determination process requirement. According to uniform guidance, the funding agency now has the latitude to make funding decisions pre-award as opposed to post-award the way it was in the pre-uniform guidance world. So that's an important issue to consider. Keep that in mind as we move forward with this, that there might be additional information that we need to have your budget office and finance office and agency leadership review and go through as it relates to the risk assessment process. In addition to that, you're going to find in the uniform guidance, some of you have already been to uniform guidance training, some changes in the way that, things are being viewed. What used to be 8 different OMB circulars have all been combined into one circular now. So there is now no separate OMB circular for districts versus colleges versus community-based organizations. All of you guys are now considered non-federal entities. And as a non-federal entity, you're going to be required to follow the same guidance regardless of the agency type that you are. In addition to that, there are some other kinds of things that you're going to find necessary to review regarding things like a new terminology called computing devices that identifies a little bit different thresholds for the kinds of things that can be purchased as supplies versus equipment. And again, more information will come out on that when the Green Book is released, and Gloria has indicated that's going to be relatively soon now. So as soon as you get that information, I also understand there's going to be training that all of you need to go to so that you can make sure you understand what the new Green Book requirements are. If you have any other questions on the uniform guidance, feel free to either ask them on this call or ask them separately to either myself or to Gloria. Okay. I'd like you to make sure that you pay attention that there's a staffing breakout form that's required in the RFA. It's in the attachments. What's important about the staffing breakout form is that you have to tell us what the total annual salary and benefits are for all personnel that are funded in whole or in part from this grant. What that means is that you need to be able to share with us, even for part-time folks, the kind of dollars that are being spent even on part-time people. And it's attachment E of this RFA. If you want to go to that attachment, I'll wait just a second for you to look at that. One of the things historically that I want to share with you about this attachment E is there has sometimes been an assumption that once you submit the staffing form, then you're done. And then you change something, like Peggy was saying earlier, like someone gets a raise or maybe someone resigns or leaves or you add a person, and now your staffing breakout is different. In addition to that, sometimes you submit a budget amendment that has salary or benefits tied to it. Anytime that you change anything on the budget that relates to salary or benefits, or if there's any personnel changes, you need to update the staffing breakout form, get it re-signed, redated, and resubmitted, and included as part of the package. We can't really process the amendment. We can't really process all the other final documentation regarding 200 until you give us this updated staffing breakout form. This is how we can make sure that we have an alignment between what we're being told is being spent on salary and benefits, what's being budgeted for it, and what's actually reality. So make sure you include that in your application as accurate as possible. Again, doing what was mentioned by Peggy earlier in terms of doing proposed salary and benefits as well. Another form that's required is going to be the self-evaluation form. This is attachment F. Remember, this is a continuation year, and one of the issues that we want to make sure as part of our risk assessment process is that you have done your own self-assessment. That means that you ask yourself questions that are on this form about expenditures, for example. Are they directly related to and proportionate with the outcomes? Have all the dollars been spent according to federal guidelines? You spend all the money that you were given, or there's some issue with that. In terms of providing services to the target population, everything that was in your plan last year, did you in fact accomplish those things? In terms of performances, did you accomplish those things? What's important on this form, keeping in mind that you're filling it out in March/April timeframe, is that you're still not at the end of the program year, which is in June. So you might have a situation where you would say, well, I'm not yet there yet. I won't have met the benchmarks until June, and that's fine. You just need to say that on this form, that as of right now, you haven't met the benchmarks, but you will, in fact, have met them by the end of the program year, or something to that effect. Use that same approach regarding expenditure funds. You might not have spent all the money, but as long as you spent, you know, I'd say 75% of the money, and you will, in fact, have spent the remaining 25% by the end of the program year, that's fine. So make the answers to your questions on this form as accurate and complete as possible. We use this to gauge how effective your program is, any issues that we need to give you assistance on, but also to make some decisions about funding. So please make sure that you take this seriously. If you have any plans to improve your performance measures by things like local advisory council implementation or some other strategy, make sure you include that in the form as well. You know, that we realize we're not doing so well in this area, but we have this plan or that plan in place to be able to improve that performance. Okay, we're going to start now talking about REOL-related changes because, again, that's a very important piece of what we're talking about today. I want to start out this section of talking about Attachment A. So I'm going to give you just a second to turn in your RFA to Attachment A. And one of the things I want to have you focus on in Attachment A is that the authorized activities that were in WIOA essentially haven't changed that much for WIOA. That were in WIOA, excuse me, they're not changed that much for WIOA. But what's happened, though, is there's been an emphasis or shift on the way in which we provide services. So authorized activities are pretty much the same as has been in the past in terms of providing any kind of education, training, or employment needs, opportunities for eligible home workers and their families. But beyond that, look at this next section called Workforce Investment Activities. We've always had to do this. But under WIOA, there's a real focus on providing training and educational assistance leading to employment. There's an emphasis and encouragement to have self-employment and microenterprise development activities. There's a real renewed and enhanced emphasis on coordination of services through one-stop delivery systems. There's also a shift in the way in which WIOA takes a look at the other services that we talked about earlier. One of those just has to do with career planning. Because everything in WIOA is focused on getting you to employment, it obviously makes sense that you need to have a client-centered approach to planning for that process and how to put together a comprehensive individual employment plan and how to provide access to those necessary workforce investment activities that were mentioned before. There's also this term, I'm sure you've seen it a lot in a lot of your reading and discussions and conferences, called career pathway development. This has to do with the process of enabling. You know what I'm saying? Enabling our people to get the education, to get the training, to get the support services, which are going to lead to attainment of high-quality, high-growth careers. Now, how do you enable that? Well, you create pathways by doing things like providing job-driven training, by doing apprenticeship programs, by doing other kinds of CTE training. And as I mentioned earlier, there's also under WIOA now a definite shift in moving away from sequence of service models. The idea now is to be able to do as much as we can, as quickly as we can, concurrently if necessary. We don't want you waiting to, for example, get someone into an auto mechanic program just because there's an English problem. You can do those concurrently. You can teach them English and also get them started learning how to fix carburetors at the same time. Along with that kind of process, there's in WIOA this emphasis of career services. What used to be core and intensive services have been collapsed into career services. And again, if you take a look at Attachment A, there's a long list of things that are considered career services. I'm not going to read all these to you. But it starts out with intake and orientation and ends up with job search and placement assistance, followed with workplace counseling, follow-up services, and ultimately, if necessary, related assistance services. So you see, this is cradle-to-grave kind of services that we're able to provide with these funds to help people get from where they are today to where they need to be tomorrow and whatever we have to do in the middle to get them there. Again, working with our partner agencies. Related assistance services are still a big part of Section 167 in WIOA because we are able still to do emergency assistance, and in fact there's a separate RFA for that, as I mentioned earlier, that we can do related assistance concurrent to training. Workplace and farm worker safety training, we can do heat stress training, we can do English language instruction, balance payments, other kinds of stabilizing supporting services such as transportation, family care, medical care available through this program. Again, keeping in mind that we do a good job of making sure that whatever related assistance we provide is in fact somehow or another tied to eliminating or overcoming one of the barriers to helping them reach that ultimate goal of employment. Okay, if you turn with me to Attachment D in the RFA, these are the special conditions that you're going to find in this RFA. This is not so much things that you're going to put in your application narrative, and some of these things, in fact, are not going to take place until after you already get your award letter. But there are things you need to be aware of as you write the application, and keeping in mind that you might have to do these things of how you write the application. So, as you all know, you have to fully comply with all state and federal regulations, comply with all the Green Book requirements, all the general assurances, terms and conditions, things of that sort. And you already know this, I'm sure, but we take it seriously that we are giving you an amount of money to complete certain performance requirements, and if for some reason you're not able to do that, or you're not able to resolve some kind of monitoring finding or issue, you are subject to having your funding reduced and sometimes even withdrawn. So just keep that in mind, that we take it seriously because we have a limited amount of money in our state budget. We don't want to see it wasted. So if you're not able to perform, and you know, we love you and we understand, we'll just need to, you know, move on and do something different. But please keep in mind that we're here to help you. We're on your team and can work with you to be able to do what you need to do to make these things work the right way. And I know that we can do that together. But one of the things you're going to have to do in this next section is make sure you follow any program office policies. Those are available on our website. There's going to be probably some new policies coming out regarding specific topics that we have concerns about. So part of what you're agreeing to do when you submit this application and you get the award letter is to follow those policies. As you know, you're required to use online databases, not only to enter data, validate information, access information, but also report performance. But it kind of makes sense that one of the issues you need to look at when you hire staff is if they're able to use online databases, or at least get the training to do that. Keep that in mind as you design your project and put together your staffing requirements. It's important that you understand that eligibility determination is a key and critical process of what we do, and one of the first things that federal monitors will look at. They want to make sure that the people that are supposed to be in this program are in fact in the program, and the people that are not supposed to be in this program are not in the program. So it's important that you have on record, in file, source documentation validating eligibility issues. We're certainly going to give you more information on what that means, and in fact we even have an annual training process that we have established to make that happen, and we now are going to require everyone that makes decisions about eligibility to be certified to do that by attending and completing this training. And it includes taking and passing a test, because we want to make sure that you clearly understand what it means to be eligible for this program, especially today when things are changing as we speak with DACA and DAPA and other kinds of issues that are coming down the line about, you know, what makes you eligible and what doesn't make you eligible. So make sure that you take this seriously, and if you have folks that are new, there is a training process that we can work with you on to get them up to speed to be able to make these judgments. If you ever have any questions about eligibility, all you got to do is call us, email us, We'll be glad to work with you to answer any specific issues or questions. And keep in mind that we also have a process of doing data validation and monitoring on site, where we actually look for and to determine whether or not the documentation to validate a birthday, for example, or validate, you know, somebody's in this country legally or is authorized to work in this country, that we have that documentation in place. Okay, continuing on in attachment D, the project planning inflation process. We already talked about this individual employment plan, how critical it is. We have a program office policy on this that clearly states that you need to have at least three goals in every plan. You need to have an employment goal first. And what kind of education you need, you need a goal to make that employment goal happen, and then whatever kind of support is necessary. What's important and critical is this plan be consistent with reality. Please, don't create a situation, and I've seen this before during monitoring, where we have a plan to have someone be a CNA, that we're paying for training them to be doing something else. So don't allow the reality to vary from the plan. So it's important that this plan be kept updated, that be kept current, and that it match reality. In order to help facilitate this process of not only making sure that the plan matches reality, but that people are in fact following the plan, they're on track, we are requiring as part of this RFA that every grantee put together a participant on track metric, and that you submit that plan for a metric with your narrative section here that's submitting in this RFA. If you haven't ever done a metric, feel free to call us. We'll walk you through it. Let me just share with you some critical pieces about building a metric. First of all, you need to understand that metric is not just a gee, I think kind of stuff. It's actually a quantitative assessment of something that you're measuring. And you have to define that something with some kind of business rules or some kind of definition of the metric. So, for example, a critical definition is going to be whether or not you're on track. Well, what does on track mean to you for your program? If somebody hasn't been in class for two class periods, 2 weeks, are they off track? Or does it take for them to be, you know, not or missing or not doing what they're supposed to do for a month? You need to have a definition of what on track means before you can say that they're off track. And then you need to also have a definition of how often you're going to track this process. Is it going to be a weekly thing, a monthly thing, a quarterly thing? And then you have to have a way of assessing whether or not people are actually relating to what they're supposed to be doing. So there's a what component to the metric, and should be a when component to the metric. Again, if you need our assistance on doing this, you know, let me know, and we'll work with you on that. But here's at the end of the day, I need you to be able to answer this question. If you have 100 participants, each one of them has an IEP, well, how many of those 100 participants are on track? If you can tell me that 80% are on track, that's great. But using your metric, what if only 40% are on track? Or what if we start collecting this data over time and say in 6 months we see that the on-track metric measure goes from 80 to 70 to 60 to 50%? Well, we got a problem then, because that means a lot of people that were initially planning to do something are no longer doing that. And so we need to do something. Something needs to have done by your process to be able to get people back on track. And this is why it's a monitoring plan progress metric, is to figure out whether or not you're actually keeping your folks on track. See if this makes sense to you. If we have a good plan and if people are on track, then we should have a good outcome. And that's all we're talking about doing. So I want to make sure we have a good plan. I want to make sure that we stay on track and that we know when we're not on track so that we can have good outcomes. And we'll work with you on that. I'm going to get 10 different metrics. My goal is to take the best of those and put one together, and ultimately we'll have one that we're going to use as a state template. But I want to give you the opportunity to tell us what you think the metrics should look like for your agency. Okay, job-driven training, we talked a little bit about this, but it's kind of like clearly now the case that all training should be focused on reaching an IMP employment goal. We don't want to be training people to learn English only. Why? Because that's not an employment goal. So make sure that all training that we do is focused on reaching an employment goal. I'm not saying we shouldn't teach people English. We just need to use that as part of the overall process to be able to get someone where they need to be. again, to make sure that the screening, which is the engine that drives this car, is working well, we are requiring under this RFA, within 30 days of the receipt of your award letter, that you provide us an eligible training provider list. If your agency already does training and they're the primary training provider for you because you're a tech center or a college, that's great. But if you're a district or a county and you don't do your own training and you have to collaborate or partner with someone to do that, we need to know who that is. And if it's a district or a college, that's fine. But if it's a private, for example, we know specifically what they're training, and we'll give you some information about the kind of information that we need on that eligible private training list as we move forward to be able to make decisions about whether or not, from our perspective, it makes sense to use them as trainers. Okay, continuing on with the project planning and placement process, it's important that you understand the strategies for employment, placement, and transition services will be identified in your project design, specifically including development of a working partnership with your local career source team and any other employment-related community agency and services. It's a critical part of what we do. We can't do it by ourselves. We have to do this in conjunction with our local community stakeholders that already do this work. All of this placement and transition-related activity should be documented in your case notes and the appropriate placement sections in your CRD. As you know, we also have a requirement in order to be able to report to the Department of Labor how well we're doing to do follow-up retention. There are guidelines, there's a program office policy on how to do that regarding the timing, the process, how to do follow-up retention. We have this thing called an 90-day review cycle schedule. If you have any questions on that, you know, let us know. But keep in mind that all of the follow-up wage information needs to be obtained from a valid external source. Let me just say that again, valid external source, like wage records, direct employer contract, Florida Department of Revenue. You can't be getting valid external kind of information just by asking people what they're making, taking their word for it. We have to have some kind of validation that the data we're putting in and sending to the Department of Labor, which is going to the Congress of the United States, has in fact been documented and validated. If you've got any questions about that, just let me know and we'll walk through it. We also require that all participants be registered in Florida Marketplace during the intake process. We've already started this process last year. It only makes sense. The Florida Marketplace is where you go to find out what kind of jobs are available. And there's all sorts of other resources available to our participants of being part of this process that they cannot have access to if they're not registered on this link. We also require that prior to exit, at some point in time, you provide every participant some kind of training on employability skills. Because even though they learn how to be an auto mechanic, even though they learn how to be CNA or whatever it is we're teaching them, it doesn't mean they can get the job. Or keep the job. So we have to be able to make sure that we provide employability skills training, and you can do this through a provider on the eligibility training provider list or through a standalone program if you have one in place. Work experience, as you know, is another option that we have available to us, but remember, work experience is not a part-time job. It's not going to be the ultimate solution to the employment issue that we're trying to resolve here, so it's designed to be another training opportunity to help people learn about what work is and how you go to work and what time you show up to work and the things you got to do to follow directions. So there's a limit on that. We put that at 300 hours. If for some reason you have work experience requirements to go beyond that, I need to get involved and improve that based on, you know, the situation. This past year, we started with a new program branding initiative. If you haven't done anything about that, please make sure all of your program information, notices, cards, things of that sort, say Farm Worker Career Development Program, make sure that all your titles, things that you put on your door when you answer the phone, that you include Farm Worker Career Development Program in the answer somehow so that people know who they're calling. And if you're at an agency that requires you to say that you're part of a county or part of a district, that's fine. Just say that you're the Farm Worker Career Development Program of, you know, X agency. Go ahead, Peggy.
Regarding the program Brandon, you also should include in there that this project is funded by the Department of Labor, and I will send you that grant number to include in on any brochures that you have to let the public know that this grant is funded by the Department of Labor. That's a requirement by the Department of Labor.
Okay. Okay, another federal and state requirement is time and effort reporting, as you know. We do have two different kinds of situations dealing with time and effort reporting. One has to do with those personnel that are funded 100% from our grant. In that case, we can get by with only getting semi-annual reporting in September and March. There's a process for that. There's a form for that, and we can walk you through that. If you have people that are on this grant, but they're also partially funded by other grants, then we need to have monthly personnel activity reports, or PARs, that indicates a proportionate percent of time and effort dedicated to this grant. Again, we have forms for that. If you have any issues or questions about that as we move forward, we're certainly glad to work with you on that. That's not part of the application process, by the way. This is something that's going to happen after the application submitted and the award letter has been granted to you. What is part of the budget development and the application process is the kind of staff that you have in place. One of the issues that we're really trying to get our arms around is how much staff we have being paid for out of these grants. In some cases, I can share with you, because I've looked at the budgets, we had a disproportionate amount of money going towards salary and benefits compared to the overall allocations. But in order to try and bring that into some kind of control, there's a chart attachment D in this section here that deals with staffing that I'd like you to pay attention to. And if you have any questions about that, you can certainly call me or email me. But essentially what we're trying to do is, again, based on the site size that you have, find out what site size you are by looking at the allocation chart on attachment B. We have established caps for the overall total FTE and then the overall salary and benefit allocation criteria. So if you're a large site, for example, then you can't stand more than 77% of the allocation total on salary and benefits and shouldn't have more than 3.50 FTE. Now, I understand that sometimes you have more FTE than that. So again, in that section right before the chart, there is an option there to provide to me an adjustment or a deviation from that chart. And I can support that if it makes sense. For example, if your particular site is a large site and you serve three or four counties, well, because you have multiple counties that you serve, that may require you to have more FTE. That makes sense, and I can support that as long as you don't approve the overall salary cap there of 82.5% of the grant allocation. So work with me on that. If you have an exception requirement, make sure you justify it correctly. I'll be glad to work with you on that. But keep in mind that what we're trying to do here is make sure that the bulk of the money does not go just to salary and benefits, and that we have enough set aside to provide for the actual participants. Okay. Personnel requirements is another issue that we need to really focus on, because it's critically important if we have really focused on limiting our personnel, that we have the right kind of folks in place, which requires that they have the right kind of skills in place. And so we have asked that you send us copies of position descriptions and the resumes of any new applicants or incumbents, in fact, so that we have them on file and we can answer this question. So the people that we're paying for this grant qualified to do this work. And so it's interesting, if you look and talk to people, sometimes they haven't been trained to be case managers, yet we're asking them to be case managers. So it's important that we go through this process, that we identify what people's skills are, and if they have a skill gap, that we either provide training for them or get some kind of process in place to get them up to speed as quickly as we can. Part of that process includes attending any annual and content-specific professional development sessions that we provide. So it is a requirement that you send all your folks to these annual conferences. And any new project coordinators must attend new project coordinator training at the State Program Office. If in the middle of the program year things change and we understand that happens, please let us know ahead of time. Don't just let us know a month later, oh, by the way, we got a new staff person here that just started last week. Coordinate that with us ahead of time so we can work with you on making sure that all the different things are done correctly. The staffing form, the review of the personnel, looking at the budget, looking at lapse rate, which is the amount of money that we don't pay people that leave because their salary isn't being spent, and what to do with those excess funds. Things of that sort have got to be worked through. So we need to know ahead of time if you're going to have that kind of issue happen. Again, as I mentioned, if you have a proposed new hire, we need to look at the resumes prior to the new hire start date to make sure that we meet minimum standards outlined in the position descriptions. Okay, cost standards. You already went over this, so I won't go over this in much more detail other than to make sure that this issue of reasonableness is something that we need to really look hard at. And there's a process that we use to make sure that things that we do with these dollars actually make sense, especially related to third-party contracts. So, you know, make sure that you define and explain, you know, what something costs and why it costs that much. Program costs is another important area that we need to look at. Administration expenses may not exceed 5%, including direct costs. And keep this idea of administration is something that you need to clearly understand. If you don't have an understanding of that, give us a call or you pay a call. Administration isn't necessarily the coordinator. That can be called direct services. But if you have a secretary, that might be considered administration. The secretary isn't doing other things like recruitment or case management or putting stuff in CRD. We have to be careful about administration expenses if they're not clearly defined in the position description and in the resumes. We also have to make sure that there's a link between what we report to the Department of Labor and what we have on our budget. This 599 process that Peggy's talking about earlier is something that we're really paying a lot of attention to, because we have to, that there's got to be a direct correlation between what we spend and what we say we're going to spend. Otherwise, you're in a situation where you're spending money that has not been approved for expenditures. If you have, in fact, changes, there is a need to do Project of Program Amendment, DOE 150 and 151. So I'm going to ask Peggy to talk about that here in just a second. I want to mention, again, in terms of collaboration with local agencies, how important it is that you have one in place and that they are doing the kind of things that are supportive of WIOA and all the things we talked about today. But don't stop there. The Title I Migrant Education Office is also a critical partner, especially in Florida, that we should be working with in terms of sharing outreach, program awareness building. They should be on local advisory council, possibly work with us on some benefit strategies, because these migrant children they work with are in fact probably living in the same houses as some of the parents that could be part of our program. So they're a critical partner that you should be including in your project plan. For sure, the Regional Workforce Development Board is something that we need to make sure that you're part of, as we mentioned earlier. There is a new requirement in WIOA that you be a mandatory partner of the One-Stop Center team. Membership on the Workforce Investment Board is recommended but optional. So make sure that your MOU says that you're a partner, that you're not just an invited guest. Okay. Travel costs, please keep this in mind. I get real concerned about travel that isn't helping us get where we want to go. So any out-of-state travel has got to be approved by this office, and we'll look at the budget, we'll look at the actual travel, whether or not it makes sense for those people to be going. You should not be charging travel for folks that are not funded with this grant. Again, that's just been totally justified by this office. So let's talk about fiscal management now and turn it over to Peggy. Peggy?
Okay, regarding the budget amendment, you want... The key is to prevent amendments if all possible. You don't want to set up your budget with the intention of actually having an amendment. You want to set your budget up to make it as accurate as possible, but sometimes you have to amend, and you want to make sure that there is no other alternative left for you to do but to amend the budget. We have changed it this year from sending the budget amendment forms to directly to our grants management office, and we're asking you to send them directly to our office. And then we will send those budgets. We will review them to ensure that that is accurate and, again, that it's allowable and reasonable before we send it to the grant management office. And we will continue the rest of the process as we have always done as far as updating your workbook and updating your, amending your budget according to the approved amendment. And remember that your budget is not approved until we receive or you receive the Form 200 form, which is saying that everything is okay and that you can actually make those justifications and your, those changes in your budget. In the electronic budget, the monthly disbursement reports, we will continue to handle that the same. You will send that an assigned copy to the to our office by the 20th of the month, and any changes to the budget that has been approved will be updated on your E-599 workbook and then sent back to you. Make sure that pay attention to those workbooks, the 599s, as they come through your office each month, because each of you should get a copy of the 599 and compare it to the expenditures that has actually taken place. And as I'm going out talking to each of the sites, I'm asking them to not only include the assigned 599, but also to send a summary of what has been spent with, along with their 599. And that, because the 599 only shows us how much has been spent, but that summary will tell us exactly what it has been spent on. Again, that will help us during the monitoring process and can help us to ask questions before we actually go out to the monitoring process. And as far as the closing out, again, the 599 will be closed out on June 30th of 2016. And it will not affect, the closeout will not affect the participants' record retention period or the record access rights by the federal state personnel.
Okay, thank you, Peggy. Again, we already talked about this issue here. I don't think we have any problems with noncompliance, but in the event that we do, it is in the RFA that your project may be discontinued for such special conditions. You failed to provide services as you stipulated you were going to do in the approved response to the RFA. Property standards, again, this is standard language, but we must get written permission if you have any kind of property issue that's valued more than $100 and you have to maintain accurate inventory records. Record retention for the Green Book is 5 years. You are subject to annual state and federal monitoring, and private nonprofit organizations have to provide a copy of any audits they're prepared in accordance with federal state fund regulations. Insurance is required. Make sure that, that all of the kinds of accident insurance provided by your agency are available also to work experience participants. And it may be that participants could be covered under existing policies. That's also allowed. Okay, this is the last slide, and it gives a lot of resources you can go to in the electronic version of this. You click on these links, go directly to the WIOA Act here. There's a lot of resources here, not just the actual text of the Act, but also frequently asked questions, other medical assistance information from the Department of Labor, links to the U.S. Department of Education and things that they have in place. There's a link to the grant award, terms, conditions, and assurances document. Section here on uniform guidance is very helpful. Several links there that can really walk you through what's available there. When the Green Book gets updated, you can access it here. Certainly here's a place you can go to get the most current version of EDGAR. Okay, what I'm going to do now is unmute everybody and open up to participant questions. So hold on just a second while I unmute everybody. Okay, can you guys hear me out there? Someone say something to make sure that I'm hearing you. Maria, are you out there?
Presentation mode is now disabled.
Okay, I apologize. I hit the wrong button. Okay.
All right, we're here.
Okay, actually. Sorry about that. That was my fault. Mea culpa. Okay, I know that was a lot of stuff. I know it was a lot of information, but it was necessary to walk you through all that, especially as you're getting ready to write this application the first time for WIOA. So let me turn it over to you guys and just ask any questions, and I'm sure that we can come up with an answer between the folks here and up in Tallahassee. Anybody have any questions? Everybody got everything, huh?
Mario, it's Teresa in Orange County. How are you?
Doing good, Teresa. How are you doing?
Great, thanks. If you were to do a quick synopsis of the difference between WIOA and WIA, what would maybe be your top three things or four things to list in the difference between the two?
Okay. I'd say that WIOA merges core intensive services into career services and eliminates sequence of services is a key thing. It's going to mandate the establishment of more cohesive and unified sector partnerships within the workforce development system, and in fact require a unified state plan to be developed. It's also going to emphasize much more career pathways and sector partnerships to promote employment in the in-demand industries and occupations. And it's establishing a common performance accountability system for all core programs in WIOA. We've never had that before. Is there anything you'd like to add to that, Gloria?
No, thank you. You've summarized it perfectly.
Okay. Did that help, Teresa?
Yes, it did. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions or comments? Thoughts? Okay, if not, then we're going to adjourn the call. Thank you very much for taking the time to listen in, and we look forward to reading your applications in April 2020. Call me if you've got any questions or concerns. Thank you.
Thank you, Mario.
Thank you, Mario.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mario, Peggy, Gloria, thank you.